Chapter 3 Beltway Boy. I was just shy of my 9th birthday when my family moved from North Carolina to Maryland. To my surprise, I found that my name had preceded me. Snowden was everywhere throughout Anne Arundel, the county we settled in, though it was a while before I learned why. Richard Snowden was a British major who arrived in the province of Maryland in 1658 with the understanding that Lord Baltimore's guarantee of religious freedom for both Catholics and Protestants would also be extended to Quakers. In 1674, Richard was joined by his brother John, who'd agreed to leave Yorkshire in order to shorten his prison sentence for preaching the Quaker faith. When William Penn's ship, the Welcome, sailed up the Delaware in 1682, John was one of the few Europeans to greet it. Three of John's grandsons went on to serve in the Continental Army during the Revolution. As Quakers are pacifists, they came in for community censure for deciding to join the fight for independence. But their conscience demanded a reconsideration of their pacifism. William Snowden, my direct paternal ancestor, served as a captain, was taken prisoner by the British in the Battle of Fort Washington in New York, and died in custody at one of the notorious Sugar House prisons in Manhattan. Legend has it that the British killed their POWs by forcing them to eat gruel laced with ground glass. His wife, Elizabeth, nay Moore, was a valued advisor to General Washington, and the mother to another John Snowden, a politician, historian, and newspaper publisher in Pennsylvania, whose descendants dispersed southward to settle amid the Maryland holdings of their Snowden cousins. Anne Arundel County encompasses nearly all of the 1,976 acres of the woodland that King Charles II granted to the family of Richard Snowden in 1686. The enterprises the Snowdens established there include the Patuxent Iron Works, one of colonial America's most important forges and a major manufacturer of cannonballs and bullets, and Snowden Plantation, a farm and dairy run by Richard Snowden's grandsons. After serving in the heroic Maryland line of the Continental Army, they returned to the plantation and, most fully living the principles of independence, abolished their family's practice of slavery, freeing their 200 African slaves nearly a full century before the Civil War. Today, the former Snowden Fields are bisected by Snowden River Parkway, a busy four-lane commercial stretch of upmarket chain restaurants and car dealerships. Nearby, Route 32/Patuxent Freeway leads directly to Fort George G. Meade, the second largest army base in the country and the home of the NSA. Fort Meade, in fact, is built atop land that was once owned by my Snowden cousins, and that was either bought from them, in one account, or expropriated from them, according to others, by the U.S. government. I knew nothing of this history at the time. My parents joked that the state of Maryland changed the name on the signs every time somebody new moved in. They thought that was funny, but I just found it spooky. Anne Arundel County is only a bit more than 250 miles away from Elizabeth City via I-95, yet it felt like a different planet. We'd exchanged the leafy riverside for a concrete sidewalk, and a school where I'd been popular and academically successful for one where I was constantly mocked for my glasses, my disinterest in sports, and especially for my accent, a strong southern drawl that led my new classmates to call me retarded. I was so sensitive about my accent that I stopped speaking in class and started practicing alone at home until I managed to sound normal, or at least until I managed not to pronounce the site of my humiliation as English class, or say that I'd gotten a paper cut on my finger. Meanwhile, all that time I'd been afraid to speak freely had caused my grades to plummet, and some of my teachers decided to have me IQ tested as a way of diagnosing what they thought was a learning disability. When my score came back, I don't remember getting any apologies, just a bunch of extra enrichment assignments. Indeed, the same teachers who doubted my ability to learn now began to take issue with my newfound interest in speaking up. My new home was on the Beltway, which traditionally referred to Interstate 495, the highway that encircles Washington, D.C., but now describes the vast and ever-expanding blast radius of bedroom communities around the nation's capital, stretching north to Baltimore, Maryland, and south to Quantico, Virginia. The inhabitants of these suburbs almost invariably either serve in the U.S. government or work for one of the companies that do business with the U.S. government. There is, to put it plainly, no other reason to be there. We lived in Crofton, Maryland, halfway between Annapolis and Washington, D.C., at the western edge of Anne Arundel County, where the residential developments are all in the vinyl-sided Federalist style and have quaint ye old names like Crofton Town, Crofton Mews, The Preserve, The Ridings. Crofton itself is a planned community fitted around the curves of the Crofton Country Club. On a map, it resembles nothing so much as the human brain, with the streets coiling and kinking and folding around one another like the ridges and furrows of the cerebral cortex. Our street was Knightsbridge Turn, a broad, lazy loop of split-level housing, wide driveways, and two-car garages. The house we lived in was seven down from one end of the loop, seven down from the other, the house in the middle. I got a huffy 10-speed bike, and with it, a paper route, delivering The Capital, a venerable newspaper published in Annapolis, whose daily distribution became distressingly erratic, especially in the winter, especially between Crofton Parkway and Route 450, which, as it passed by our neighborhood, acquired a different name, Defense Highway. For my parents, this was an exciting time. Crofton was a step up for them, both economically and socially. The streets were tree-lined and pretty much crime-free, and the multicultural, multiracial, multilingual population, which reflected the diversity of the Beltway's diplomatic corps and intelligence community, was well-to-do and well-educated. Our backyard was basically a golf course, with tennis courts just around the corner, and beyond those, an Olympic-sized pool. Commuting-wise, too, Crofton was ideal. It took my father just 40 minutes to get to his new posting as a chief warrant officer in the Aeronautical Engineering Division at Coast Guard Headquarters, which at the time was located at Buzzard Point in southern Washington, D.C., adjacent to Fort Leslie J. McNair. And it took my mother just 20 or so minutes to get to her job at the NSA, whose boxy, futuristic headquarters, topped with radomes and sheathed in copper to seal in the communication signals, forms the heart of Fort Meade. I can't stress this enough for outsiders. This type of employment was normal. Neighbors to our left worked for the Defense Department. Neighbors to the right worked in the Department of Energy and the Department of Commerce. For a while, nearly every girl at school on whom I had a crush had a father in the FBI. Fort Meade was just the place where my mother worked, along with about 125,000 other employees, approximately 40,000 of whom resided on site, many with their families. The base was home to over 115 government agencies, in addition to forces from all five branches of the military. To put it in perspective, in Anne Arundel County, population just over 500,000, every 800th person works for the post office, every 30th person works for the public school system, and every 4th person works for or serves in a business, agency, or branch connected to Fort Meade. The base has its own post offices, schools, police and fire departments. Area children, military brats, and civilians alike would flock to the base daily to take golf, tennis, and swimming lessons. Though we lived off base, my mother still used its commissary as our grocery store to stock up on items in bulk. She also took advantage of the base's PX, or post exchange, as a one-stop shop for the sensible and, most important, tax-free clothing that my sister and I were constantly outgrowing. Perhaps it's best, then, for listeners not raised in this milieu to imagine Fort Meade and its environs, if not the entire Beltway, as one enormous boom-or-bust company town. It is a place whose monoculture has much in common with, say, Silicon Valley's, except that the Beltway's product isn't technology, but government itself. I should add that both my parents had top-secret clearances, but my mother also had a full-scope polygraph, a higher-level security check that members of the military aren't subject to. The funny thing is, my mother was the farthest thing from a spy. She was a clerk at an independent insurance and benefits association that serviced employees of the NSA, essentially providing spies with retirement plans. But still, to process pension forms, she had to be vetted as if she were about to parachute into a jungle to stage a coup. My father's career remains fairly opaque to me to this day, and the fact is that my ignorance here isn't anomalous. In the world I grew up in, nobody really talked about their jobs, not just to children, but to each other. It is true that many of the adults around me were legally prohibited from discussing their work, even with their families. But to my mind, a more accurate explanation lies in the technical nature of their labor and the government's insistence on compartmentalization. Tech people rarely, if ever, have a sense of the broader applications and policy implications of the projects to which they're assigned. And the work that consumes them tends to require such specialized knowledge that to bring it up at a barbecue would get them disinvited from the next one because nobody cared. In retrospect, maybe that's what got us here.